When we were hunters and gatherers, everything seemed to go pretty well, according to you.
For almost 99% of our history, we lived as hunter-gatherers in relatively small communities. And that is where our brains, particularly our neocortexes, evolved. And what you see throughout evolutionary history is that groups got larger, and with groups getting larger, we had more problems to solve, complex social problems to solve. And we needed to coordinate these groups, and that is where leadership came in. Now, at some point in time, it was became very advantageous for our ancestors to lead a sedentary life, to move into these communities, villages, and there was pressure on creating bigger and bigger societies. And what we moved then towards is from a situation where leadership was taken up by individuals in a flexible way, the best hunter leading the hunt, the best person with knowledge about plants becoming the shaman and the medicine man. What we suddenly were faced with, and that is really very recently in human evolutionary history, something going back 10, 13,000 years ago, is we needed somebody to represent our larger community to the outside world. Because there were other groups out there who were suddenly competing with us. And also, we needed individuals to redistribute food resources, for example. And so, we needed designated individuals to lead.
The big man, you call
Yes,
him.
the big man is one example where, in horticultural societies, for example, in the Northwest Pacific, among the First Nations people, big men emerged who took on these roles of redistributing food, for example. And they were literally big men, they were physically strong individuals, presumably also because of the advantages of a big physical leader in terms of intergroup competition and conflict, warfare perhaps. And so. So there was a need for structural or institutionalized leadership, and that emerged really rather recently. And so the problem with that is that these individuals got a lot of power and control over resources. And unfortunately, it is also part of human nature to, once you have power, to try and use it to your own benefit and to the benefit of your kin, essentially. And so that is when the problem started to emerge. On the one hand, a drive towards creating bigger and bigger societies, which we're still doing today. And with that, the need for these structural leadership, chiefs in the old days, big men, but now CEOs and presidents. And then that created a new problem, and that is how to control these individuals. How to make sure that these individuals, although it is in their nature to abuse their power position, how do you keep them, how do you keep the checks and balances? And then you talk about a sort of a modern era in leadership politics, where you say, well, this arms race between leaders and followers. Is sometimes advantaging the leaders in certain areas, in certain parts of the world, in certain times, and at other times it's favoring the followers. But there is this constant struggle, and there's many modern examples of that. What you face in your own country with the politics in Canada, but also what is going on in the Arab world. You see this constant struggle between followers who don't want to be dominated. They need their leaders, but they don't want to be dominated. And on the other hand, the leaders who like to dominate essentially and like to accumulate as much power as they can to possibly benefit themselves and their cronies.
We're still funny little monkeys, in a lot of ways, because you go back and look at other primate models and you see a lot of these same behaviors.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that you have to consider when you're looking at other species is, first of all, who are we genetically most close to? And that's chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, etc. So that's one way of looking at our evolutionary history with regard to leadership. Is, well, are there any sort of similarities with chimpanzees and gorillas? And then you see, well, some ways we are unique as humans because we have this history of egalitarian hunter-gatherer societies, which none of the other primates have. Most primates operate in these dominance hierarchies, except for the chimpanzees and the bonobos, where you see more of a tendency towards, I wouldn't call it democracy, but it's a coalition of alphas, if you like, leading the group. So you see a bit of a sort of a move towards some sort of shared dominance. I wouldn't call it leadership necessarily.
The leaders get the what, three S's as their
the status, sex, and salary. So that that is the perks. That is the argue is that at some point we need it when we start living in these increasingly large communities and groups. We needed to coordinate these groups. So we pushed forward these individuals to take on these coordination roles. But these individuals were not crazy. They wouldn't do it for nothing. And so we gave them some privileges in terms of status, prestige, and also giving them access to reproductive resources, sex, i.e. mates. And the modern manifestation of that is salary.
The book is Selected, Why Some People Lead, Why Others Follow, and Why It Matters. I've been speaking with the author, Mark Van Vught, and Selected is published by Random House of Canada.